feasibility study on MHEV application for motorbikes, component sizing, strategy optimization through dynamic programming, and analysis of possible benefits, by Mangaruga et al. Welcome to Journal Club. For October 6, 2024, I'm Malcolm Diggs. About a month ago, on September 7th, Hector Garzo rounded the final turn at San Marino, crossed the finish line, and became the 2024 Moto E World Champion. He wasn't riding any normal motorcycle. He was riding a fully electric Ducati superbike with a top speed of about 171 miles per hour. In fact, everyone in that race was riding a Ducati, because the storied Italian manufacturer has signed a deal to be the exclusive provider of electric motorcycles for the entire field through 2026. You see, Ducati is going long on electric motorcycles and doing everything they can to push the technology and the acceptance of it to higher and higher levels. So far, they haven't seen much success. The Moto E race, where Garzo was crowned champion, was streamed live on YouTube. As of this writing, the video only has about 11,000 views total for a world championship. Undeterred, the company has turned to sponsoring hybrid motorcycle research. Fully electric sport bikes may not be drawing in many buyers anytime soon, but maybe, just maybe, if they're able to roll out a hybrid instead, that will have a better chance of catching on. It's a long shot, but worth exploring. And that's how four researchers in Italy ended up with a 930cc twin-cylinder Ducati engine sitting in their lab. It was a gift from Ducati to help the authors in their quest. They set out to design a hybrid motorcycle drivetrain that offers a compelling value proposition. This is harder than it sounds. It's been tried many times by many other research teams, but most of the previous experiments resulted in a product that nobody wanted. But why? The first thing to understand is that full hybrids normally have automatic transmissions. Motorcycles don't. A full hybrid needs the ability to switch itself from running on the e-motor to running on the ICE, the internal combustion engine, over and over again. A motorcycle rider, on the other hand, needs to have fine-grained control over exactly how much power is going to the rear wheel at all times. If the bike suddenly shifts or switches between e-motor and ICE while you're in the middle of a curve, for example, you can lose control and crash. This isn't an issue for slow-speed scooters like Vespas and the like, but for high-performance sport bikes, it's a deal-breaker. Because of this, research has focused less on full hybrids and more on what are called MHEVs, or mild hybrids. In a mild hybrid, the electric motor isn't powerful enough to move the entire vehicle itself. It just helps the ICE when it can, improving fuel efficiency a small amount. It's still a challenge to design an MHEV system that can handle a manual transmission and leave control in the hands of the rider at the same time, but it's much less of a challenge than designing the same for a full hybrid. The second thing to understand is that even mild hybrid systems have a lot of big, heavy moving parts, which creates a host of issues for a motorcycle. One, there's very little room to fit the parts. When you remove the plastic fairings on a sport bike, you'll see the frame is jam-packed with components already. Two, there's very little allowance for added weight on a sport bike. Every pound of weight added to the bike changes the power-to-weight ratio and slows the bike down. Three, if they make the parts very small, those components might not generate or store enough power for the fuel savings to outweigh the fuel cost of the extra weight. And four, the bulkiness and weight of the components necessitate that any regenerative braking system generally be attached to the rear wheel, where the bike's frame can accommodate it. The issue is, many riders rarely use the rear brake. They prefer the front. This was certainly an uphill climb. The author set out to accomplish four things. One, define the topology of the engine. If you can imagine what the schematic of a motorcycle drivetrain looks like, that's what they mean by topology, which things go where. They needed to decide how big to make the e-motor and where to put it. They also need to figure out where to put the battery pack cells, also called the accumulator, the fuses, the switches, the battery management system, a power inverter, and a cooling system. Two, they needed to define the method for energy recovery. If regenerative braking was a lost cause, they needed to figure out what else would work. Three, they needed to define the power splitting strategy. At any given time, the bike may be in any gear, at any RPM, going any speed. They needed a decision logic that would factor in these variables and determine how much of the power would be coming from the e-motor and how much should be coming from the ICE. Four, they needed to repeat all of the above for both city and highway driving, and then reconcile these results into a single set of recommendations. And in all these cases, the top line optimization goal was fuel economy, nothing else. They could compromise total weight, they could compromise the bike's form, they could compromise the top speed and the handling of the bike, as long as they maximized the number of miles the bike could travel on a given amount of gas. So in essence, these sets of challenges were one big multi-step CSP, a constraint satisfaction problem. To solve it required that they incorporate a paradigm called dynamic programming, a technique for solving optimization problems that contains several smaller problems. In dynamic programming, you solve each subproblem, store the result, and then build the full solution out of those smaller building blocks using a DP algorithm. The author started out by creating a 1D model of the drivetrain, using it to help them visualize and understand the problem in more detail. This was basically just a little diagram of the motor and other components. They studied the relationships between each piece of the system and then incrementally replaced each relationship with an equation that represented it. So little by little, they went from a sketch to a mathematical model of the bike. It's difficult to overstate how much work this was. Just to give you a peek into part of their process, here's what they had to do just to figure out how much longitudinal force was going to the rear tire. They first needed to calculate the aerodynamic force acting in the longitudinal direction, then the aerodynamic resistance of the front and rear wheels, then the inertia. All this required that they figure out the contact patch size of the tires and also create a 3D model to calculate the moments of inertia of the components. And that was just a small taste. The paper includes all the equations and all the physics they had to figure out for this study. The mathematical model gave them a platform on which to run their optimization strategies. This base model just had default characteristics for all the various parameters. Their job was now to optimize the five subproblems from earlier, adjusting the parameters in each problem to optimize for fuel economy, and then to synthesize all the individual results into one coherent solution. In other words, it was time for dynamic programming. I'll spare you all the formulas and just give you the high-level details. For each of the following problems, they defined a range or set of possibilities and then ran simulations to find the optimal value. The electric motor. They compared 14 options for e-motors, starting with a motor that had 0.5 kilowatts of max power and increasing it in increments of 0.5 all the way up to 7 kilowatts. By comparison, the little electric scooters that you rent in a city would normally be 0.5 kilowatts or smaller. The accumulator. They compared 8 different accumulators, those are battery pack cells, ranging in size from 500 kilojoules all the way up to 4,000 kilojoules. Energy recovery. They modeled combinations of several different strategies. They tried out regenerative braking, then they tried out ice load point shifting, where the power is siphoned out of the ice system during its most efficient moments and used to power the electric system. And finally, they tried electrifying ancillary components like the water and oil pumps, etc., to save weight and thereby improve overall efficiency. Power splitting strategy. At any given moment, the system could be using no electric power at all, or lots of it. The logic for deciding when to use the battery and when not to use it is the power splitting strategy that was optimized. City versus highway. They simulated all the above for city driving and highway driving separately, using standards from the WMTC, the World Motorcycle Test Cycle standards. Once they gathered all these results, they defined the global constraints and the overall goal, and then used a DP algorithm to calculate the final results. And here they are. If the authors completely ignored the cost of the system and the fact that any battery-based system naturally degrades over time, then there were some configurations that made sense from a fuel economy standpoint. Having a large battery never worked well, and regenerative braking was not worth it, but small batteries and load point shifting were both reasonably effective. Overall, they painted a picture of two very different sets of ideal configurations, one for highway and one for city. In the city, the stop and go makes the weight of the EV components very important. So smaller engines and a power splitting strategy that uses the battery more when you're taxiing at lower speed makes sense. On the converse, when you have lots of highway miles, the opposite is true. You want a larger EV motor and a splitting strategy that helps you cruise efficiently at highway speeds. Consolidating these two strategies into a single coherent strategy proved a challenge. In my opinion, this may be a case for having a highway mode and a separate city mode, rather than trying to combine them into a single rule set. Overall, I think their research was promising and interesting, but it does have some serious limitations. For one, the motorcycle manufacturers can't ignore cost or performance hits to the superbikes. they also can't ignore how the batteries will degrade over time. And critically, they probably can't use dynamic programming in the wild at all. Dynamic programming is resource intensive and requires that a lot of variables be known up front. This makes it a bad choice for online use because the results will be delayed and missing context. To their credit, the authors do acknowledge this issue in the paper. We'll see what comes of this research. I'm sure Ducati will continue to put more resources behind hybrid research like this and will continue to attempt to push e-motorcycles onto consumers. One day, I'm sure they'll succeed. But as software engineers, what can we take away from this? Namely, I think that this is a good blueprint for how to solve rigorous and multifaceted constraint satisfaction problems. Dynamic programming is not that popular of a paradigm, you don't see it that often, but when you're faced with a very particular set of constraints, it's difficult to think of a better way to solve them than DP. If you'd like to dig into the equations that the authors wrote or walk through any of the optimizations in more detail, I'd encourage you to download the paper. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. I hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Digg signing off. See you tomorrow.